With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it's a very good evening this Monday evening. I'm Wayne Turner, taking you through till 7 o'clock this evening. The program is Talk at 6 with Wayne, and we chat about relevant issues taking place in our world, in our communities. First Monday of the month is our educational psychologist. Second is our finance expert. And then the third is usually a community slot. We had that last week. And then this week, it's a medical slot. And in studio, I have with me Dr. Joanne Corrigal. Good evening, Joanne.
Hi, good evening, Wayne. Good evening to your listeners.
Right, it's really great having you in studio, because the subject we're going to be talking about is one that's on many people's minds, and there are so many confusing viewpoints, and we want to try and drill down to the bottom of this subject. I was part of a Zoom group explaining some of the finer details of what is the COVID-19 vaccine, why we need it, should we have it, some of the myths and the rest. And out of that, I found or got introduced to Dr. Joanne Corrigal, and so that's the reason she is in studio. Now, we want to just start off before I introduce her. Before you try to switch off, you hear the word vaccine. This is not a conspiracy. You do not have to have the vaccine if you don't want to. So stay tuned, listen, and even if you're not a vaccine person, because you might be pleasantly surprised with some of the facts, the research that we're going to present to you this evening. So, Joanne, just give us a bit of background, who you are. I know you're involved in public health, and you collaborate with the Western Cape Department of Health. Just explain what you do and what your expertness is.
Sure, with pleasure. So I'm a public health expert, and I have been working with the Western Cape Department of Transport and Public Works since June 2020. And me and my team have been working on the intersectoral COVID-19 hotspot response in the southern and western sub-districts.
Explain what that is.
Sure. So the Western Cape is divided into different districts, and within the metro is also further subdivided into smaller sub-districts. And so when COVID-19 hit, you know, what government realized is that it's not just the Department of Health that now has to deal with this problem, because it's not just a health problem. As we all know on the ground, COVID-19 didn't just affect people's health, it also affected our economy, our ability to feed ourselves, other health matters. And so this was the reason why the Department of Health then allocated different areas to be overall managed by different departments. And so the southern and western sub-districts were allocated to the Department of Transport and Public Works. And so a lot of that work has involved numerous things. Part of it has been education and awareness raising and engagement with communities around COVID. But as I said, it's also involved a lot of other projects. At the moment, we're busy doing a collaborative project with the Department of Health. And that project is very much focused on really trying to involve community leaders in understanding what the COVID-19 vaccine is. The reason that we've embarked on this project is that, you know, what we saw is that in December, the COVID-19 vaccine, the first one in the world, was given to this lady in the United Kingdom, 91-year-old lady, actually, grandmother. And she then had her second dose 3 weeks later, no problems. And what we saw was great excitement, a lot of relief around the world. But in our communities, what we were seeing on the ground was people actually not hopeful, but actually very anxious. And a lot of conspiracy theories being spread around WhatsApp. So from that, we decided to do some research to find out how do people feel about it. And we picked up people are confused, anxious. And so we partnered with the Department of Health to create community videos in which community leaders can talk about some of the issues related to the vaccine.
Because many people are pro-vaccine, but they have no idea. When I entered the Zoom discussion yesterday, I introduced myself. I said, I am pro the vaccine, but I don't know why I'm pro the vaccine. I need information to just let me know. You know, I mean, I have done a little bit of research myself, but still it's a subject that has got so much to it. And then when you've got this second or third force undermining and I mean, when we talk some of the conspiracy theory and some of the misinformation, disinformation, fake news, you'll see, I mean, there is some ridiculous information doing the rounds. So if you've just joined the program, we are talking the COVID-19 vaccine, and Dr. Joanne Corrigal is the expert we have in studio. Now, let's first establish a little bit. Everyone knows what COVID-19 is, so we don't need to go into that, but let's talk around what the vaccine is, how it's been developed, and as we go along, some of the information will dispel myths before we get into the disinformation, some of the stuff that's doing the rounds and really, as you said, making people anxious.
Sure. So do you want me to explain how the vaccine was developed?
Yeah. I mean, just what is the vaccine? First, what are vaccines? I mean,
yes. We
know generally polio vaccine, smallpox, MMR and all the rest of it. We've heard of it. We've all had vaccines from babies all the way through to adults, especially when you travel and you go to yellow fever, whatever it might be. But people don't actually understand how the vaccine, what is the principle of a vaccine and what it does?
So the way that vaccines in general work is that they normally take either a very small part of whatever the virus or bacteria is that is causing the problem, and it's either inactivated or, if it's still live, it's a very tiny, tiny part. And so, for example, with the COVID-19 vaccine, it's made from a tiny part of the virus, which is enough to go into your body and cause your body to have an immune response. Okay, so your body, when it sees that piece of foreign material, it's activated to create antibodies, which essentially are fighter cells, which can then fight that virus and kill it. How does this help? Well, when you then later exposed to the COVID virus, those antibodies will immediately recognize it and you'll be able to kill off the coronavirus very quickly.
So it's basically training your immune system to recognize something that's never seen before.
Correct. And that tiny part of the virus that's injected into you is not enough to cause COVID-19. So it's very important for your listeners to understand that you needn't be worried that now the vaccine is going to give them COVID-19. Mm. No, it cannot give you COVID-19. It's just enough of the virus to help your body learn to understand what does it look like so that when I see it again, I'm ready with my arms to actually kill the virus.
Right. You used the word live. With a vaccine, you said sometimes live virus is used. Okay, then we need to just clarify something. With the polio vaccine and the developments, I've done some reading over the years. There was an accidental introduction of live virus and it actually caused problems in people. What's the difference between something when you can use a live virus and when it actually causes serious problems?
I'm sorry, I don't quite follow your question.
The whole polio scenario, it wasn't a live virus and someone accidentally inoculated people with a live virus, and with polio, you weren't supposed to do that. How is it different with other vaccines when they use live virus? Because that's one of the questions people have raised. Is it safe? Was that just a single incident?
Yeah, so normally, I mean, the way that vaccines are tested is that they go through three phases of testing.
Mm.
So in the first of all, it's developed in the lab, all right? From there, it then gets tested in animals purely for safety. Mm. So does this vaccine harm the animal? If not, it then gets tested in young adults, okay? If it's safe in young adults, then it gets tested in a broader group, and specifically people who are also older and people who have comorbidities like hypertension, diabetes, HIV, etc. If it is safe in that group, then it gets tested for efficacy. In other words, does it actually stop COVID?
Right.
And so this is the process that all vaccines get tested in, you know. And so
are these live viruses, or because I mean, you
it depends on the vaccine.
All I'm trying to establish that with some vaccines, it's perfectly safe to use a live virus.
Correct.
But that is established during the
testing phases.
The stringent yes. tests. Okay,
correct.
That's good.
Correct. So it differs on what pathogen you're talking about.
Okay. Right. So what often happens, something like vaccine gets foisted on people and say, you need to take it without any knowledge or understanding. And the best information we get, especially with the world of social media, is often the wrong information. The question, okay, firstly, is the vaccine effective?
Yes, so the vaccine is very effective. If you take the J&J vaccine, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is the one that's currently being used in South Africa, that vaccine's been tested in more than 44,000 people to find out, A, is it safe, and B, is it effective? It was found to be safe, and it was found to be effective against the South African variant, which for us is obviously very important.
Is that a good sampling, 44,000 in research?
Yes, absolutely. You know, that's a very high number of people. And so if you look at what were their results, what they found was that it offers 85% protection against moderate and severe disease. So you won't, in other words, land up in hospital from COVID. And it has provided 100% protection against dying from COVID. So what that tells us is that really, if you have the vaccine, your chances of landing up in hospital or dying from COVID are very small. So this is a vaccine that's very effective.
So how long does the protection last? And that we're talking, let's say, J&J vaccine.
Yeah. So now, when it comes to how long it lasts, there it gets a little bit tricky. Why? Because you need to think, how long have we had the vaccine? So if somebody told you, oh, the vaccine's going to keep you, we've proven that it will keep you safe for 3 years, you know they're talking nonsense because we haven't had the vaccine for 3 years. How could we have proved that?
Right.
Right. So how long has it, you know, been tested for? How long do we know people have immunity for? So far, we know that it's at least 4 months. Beyond that, we don't know. And that's why people are being monitored to see how long it lasts. And people will have their antibody levels checked so that we can find out, okay, how long does it last? Some vaccines last a lifetime. You just need them once. Others, like the flu vaccine, for example, you need to have every year. Why? Because the virus changes each year.
Mm.
So it could be with coronavirus and SARS-CoV-2 that we need to have different types of vaccines every year, like a booster shot. But at this point, we don't know.
So there are very tight controls when it comes to the implementation of the process, and a continual cycle of research is taking place. So it hasn't just been given to us and said, there it is. We don't know if it's 4 months or it's 4 years, but, you know, carry on. People who are being given it, let's say there's 44,000 people, they are constantly being monitored. It's a continuous research program.
Correct, yes. Even the health workers that are being given the vaccines now, there, what's being researched is not, do they work or are they safe? That we know for sure. But it's giving us an opportunity to see how long does it last for. What are the difficulties in rolling this out to a large number of people? You know, because obviously a trial is 44,000 people. Now we're rolling out across the world. I think the figures from yesterday were 410 million people across the world have now had the vaccine. So that's now a much larger number of people. And so that aspect of trying to monitor what is it like when you roll it out really to that number of people, that's another level of research. So when people go for the vaccine, it's highly controlled. You have to register ahead of time. You schedule an appointment. You administer the vaccine by somebody who's been trained in vaccination administration. You wait for 15 to 30 minutes at the vaccination site in case you develop any kind of allergic reaction. And then thereafter, you're given a number that any side effect you get, you need to report it to that number. And so all of that data is then collected. So we are very clear always exactly what's happening, what kinds of side effects people are experiencing.
So the first phase of vaccination is health workers. I mean, it's a perfect, how can I say, a perfect sampling of people with which to do research. Because when you normally roll out a vaccine, it's not, you don't say, okay, all doctors, nurses, para health, whatever it is. And that they're the people who will monitor themselves to make sure and are likely to give feedback. So it's possibly one of the best trials for any type of vaccine in the history of humanity. We've got so many people actually interested. And like you say, you give the number out. Someone who has a slight concern, they'll phone it in. So you're going to have people. So feedback and the research around this, we can be pretty sure and comfortable that things are going the way they should.
Absolutely. And I think in a way, you know, for the ordinary person on the street, I think they should take great comfort from the fact that health workers are able to give them feedback, you know. And so one of the things that we've been working with the Department of Health on is actually we've been making videos of health workers when they get vaccinated 24 hours later, a week later, a month later. And then we basically just ask them to explain what was it like, what side effects did you have. And so from that, we're able to really show those videos to communities, share that information with people so that they're really aware themselves that, okay, this is it's safe for me to take. And also for other health workers, because don't forget, health workers are also people. And, you know, there have been health workers who also at the beginning, they're a bit anxious. Once they see their colleagues have had vaccinations, they feel a lot more comfortable.
Nothing breeds success like success.
Exactly.
Before we move on from Johnson & Johnson, the other vaccine is the Pfizer vaccine. Now, there's been a bit of negative information in the news, and people have been giving incorrect information, and there have been concerns that we got stuff from India and it was old. And, you know, there's all sorts of information. Just explain to us what the difference is between, I know Johnson & Johnson is two jabs, Pfizer is a one.
No, other way around.
Other way around. Pfizer, two jabs, Johnson & Johnson, one. Oh, we are going, we're currently using Johnson & Johnson, but yes. We will, that 20 million doses, is that going to be Pfizer?
That's Pfizer. Okay. So we started off with a plan of using AstraZeneca, but then once it got here, we got the data that in fact it wasn't effective against the South African variant, and therefore that the AstraZeneca rollout was stopped. There was a program where it was being given, as far as I know, to more people who were elderly, because the thought was that, okay, it could still protect against severe COVID, and that was part of a study. Then in terms of our official rollout, we essentially have been using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to health workers. We've now got the shipment of 20 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine coming in, and that's as far as we've got so far.
Okay. I'm sure someone listening is going to ask the question. We're on Johnson & Johnson. You're saying how safe it is, and we check in on the – now we're swapping to another one.
Mm-hmm.
The whole process has to start again with checking up on people, because we know Johnson & Johnson is working and the side effects.
Yes.
Is it not logical to have continued with Johnson & Johnson, and why are we going across to Pfizer?
Yeah. So which vaccine gets used is not part of a decision process that I'm involved in.
Okay.
So I can't tell you exactly why they've decided to use which one over another. But there's a number of factors that really make, you know, the provision of a particular or the selection of a particular vaccine important. So one of them, and probably the most important one, is availability. And as we know, there's been a race for vaccines around the world. Mm. So it's not always easy to get, you know, a particular type of vaccine and the number of doses you need in the time that you need it. So availability is one factor. Cost is another factor. Being able to store it in a particular kind of fridge is another issue. So there's many factors that go into it. And then obviously the big one is it effective against your variant and your country?
But the criteria used in selecting a J&J vaccine will be applied to selecting the Pfizer vaccine.
Correct.
So it's not like, well, we've run out of that. Let's check out and see if we can find another one. The same stringent controls and criteria apply to any other vaccine.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you must remember as well, this is a global effort. And so Pfizer vaccine has been rolled out in the millions to people all around the world. You know,
and they are controlling it and feeding
also being
back.
Monitored. Everybody is being monitored, you know, because it's the concerns people, the ordinary person has around, oh, but this is a new vaccine. Is it safe? Is it effective? Those are global concerns. And so, you know, it's something that everybody is monitoring extremely closely, and of course, you know, as the scientists are involved in all of these rollouts, and it's part of the scientist's job to monitor, are there any unexpected side effects, you know, and we haven't had any instances of anybody dying from an actual vaccine. you've had people who've died after having a vaccine who would have died from that condition anyway. And unfortunately, that's often created confusion where people think, oh, now because that person had a vaccine 2 weeks before, this must have caused their death. And I think probably the easiest way to think about that is, you know, if I take a vaccine now and then next week I go outside and I get hit by a car and I die, are you going to say that the vaccine caused me to be hit by a car? You wouldn't. It doesn't make any sense, you know. And it's very similar with other kinds of conditions, you know.
Like you have a heart attack 2 weeks afterwards. If you hadn't had the vaccine, you probably would have had a... because you've sort of preempted me. I was reading some information with the administering of the vaccine to older people in the UK. And one of the big questions that was raised when the whole number of these people who received the vaccines died... This explanation was given that when you're giving it to high-risk people, at the very worst, it could accelerate an existing condition or the if you had an allergic reaction as a young, healthy 27-year-old, a 91-year-old might not survive that reaction. So what you're saying is the virus, I mean, the vaccine hasn't killed anybody. I mean, it's just not part of the... it doesn't feature, but there are these other incidents that even then you can't attribute it to it. You can't say that because you've got no control. You can't say, well, let's retest it and see if that person died without the vaccine, unfortunately. Yes. But the naysayers will often use all of that information. And it's still such a microscopic amount of people who have actually died.
No, absolutely. And there is a way that we can tell if it's natural or not. How? Because we know every year, you know, we know that the same number of people will die of any particular condition. And so,
and in a specific age group, in a nursing home, whatever it is.
Exactly. So what, and this is what scientists have done now. So they've investigated these situations and they've compared it to previous years of people in that age group. And there's been nobody has found that there's been any extraordinary deaths that we wouldn't have expected anyway without the vaccine.
So no spikes in the graph?
No spikes in the graph following vaccinations, no.
Yeah, unfortunately, when you know, in journalism, we have something called confirmation bias, and I don't know if you're aware of it in your field. And if I interview someone on a hot topic like abortion, if you're a pro-abortion, as a journalist, you'll source all the information that supports what you believe. If you're anti, you'll do the same thing. And unfortunately, I think in this realm, a lot of confirmation bias takes place in specifically the pseudo experts, where people aren't really expert. They are scientists, perhaps, or they are reputable people, but they don't have the expertise in the area on which they're commenting. And the research, the personal research they're doing, they've assimilated everything that's anti. Now, this sort of information must hurt the cause quite a bit when you have these people dying.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've really just experienced it in the last couple of days, right? Where, you know, there were these cases in Norway where people had taken the AstraZeneca vaccine and a few people passed away. And in that space of time, the scientists were busy investigating, why did those people die? Was it connected to the vaccine or not? Before they had actually concluded that investigation, a lot of the politicians stopped the rollout of that vaccine in several European countries, okay? Which, considering that they're all in the middle of a third wave, is absolute lunacy, you know? But, you know, often these decisions can be political, and so a political decision was obviously taken at that time. Then the scientists finished their investigations. They did that comparison I was telling you about, mm-hmm. where they looked at, okay, are these numbers higher than we would have expected in this age group and at this particular time of year? And they concluded, no, that there was no evidence to support that there was any connection between the two. And as I said, it's much like being hit by a car after having the vaccine. Mm. You know, the vaccine didn't cause the car to hit you, you know. And so now they've actually reversed that ban. And so now they're rolling out that vaccine again. However, in South Africa, the ban on AstraZeneca hasn't been removed yet, you know. And so what we see then is the harm that gets created by, you know, this kind of, this fear that I think pervades society and therefore journalists as well, whereas as soon as there's anything bad that crops up, you know, it makes the headlines, everybody panics, and I think it creates a lot of harm, actually, because then those people who were fearful now go, you know, oh gosh, here's something that confirms what I believed. And as it turns out, it's not true, you know. But now, are the people who've seen that headline going to actually now also see the fact that it was proven not true? You know, they might not.
It's not when you use confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is a negative thing if you've just tuned in. It's just confirming what your personal belief system is and has nothing to do with research. And that's one of the big issues around these deaths is that it's happened in the past with other vaccines and they've researched and they've looked into it and they've confirmed it has nothing to do with the vaccine. But because it's affecting everyone. I mean, I've never thought about the polio vaccine or the smallpox vaccine or a number of other vaccines because they really don't impact us. But because COVID is impacting every single person on this planet, we're all involved. Okay, a big question that arises out of this is how come it was developed so fast? They say 6 to 8, 10 years to develop a vaccine in other areas. All of a sudden, we've come up with this vaccine. Surely it must be a government conspiracy that they've just got something now to, they've managed to control us. So now they've got us all in order. Now they want to give us a vaccine to give a reason why they can now open up again. Give us some info around that.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for that question. And I think it's a question that's on a lot of people's minds, you know, so it's a very important question. So I think the first thing to understand is that when it comes to coronaviruses, this is not the first time we've seen coronavirus. This is just the first time we've seen this particular type of coronavirus. So the official scientific name for it is SARS-CoV-2. But we have had other types of coronaviruses, such as SARS-CoV-1, which created a number of infections around Asia a couple of years ago. And because
could I just interrupt there? I heard that the first coronavirus identified was done in the 50s.
I don't know the exact date, but
I mean,
there's
something
quite feasible,
way back. So it's not something new. And we just seen because of world population and people living closer together, what happened years ago is very different to what's happening now. So, you know, you've got all these factors that impact it.
Yeah, so this is a new kind of coronavirus. We certainly have never seen COVID-19 before, you know, which is why it's had such a devastating impact. Because our bodies have never seen it before, we have, you know, the whole world had no immunity to it. And that's why it just spread globally like wildfire and has caused such devastation and such severe illness, you know. Because once people have been exposed to it, you get certain degrees of immunity, you know, which is why, for example, we get a break in between the waves because you've got a certain number of people who have natural immunity for a certain amount of time that enables us to have a brief pause. But of course, when COVID hit, nobody in the entire world had any immunity because it's the very first time we've seen it. So, you know, so it's a new type of coronavirus, but certainly we've had other types of coronaviruses before.
So there's already in the field of coronavirus, there's already 3 or 4 years of research and people studying it. It might not be the same variant, but they've been studying it. So they know how to, whereas polio or the other ones, they had to take ages before they worked it out. So we have that research already.
Yes, exactly. So scientists didn't have to start from scratch. They were building on pre-existing research of vaccine development for these types of viruses. So that already gave us a great head start. Then combined with that, you need to understand that this has really been an unprecedented historical event because, as I said, you know, devastated not just globally from a health perspective, but also from an economic perspective. So what that meant is that, you know, probably for the first time ever, you had scientists around the world all focused on exactly the same problem at exactly the same time and massive amount of funding to actually allow scientists to study it, you know, in numbers across all of the different countries of the world.
So you've got number one, you've got pre-existing research. Number two, you've got scientists all over the world who's studying it. And number three, I mean, as a researcher, you will understand that how difficult it is to get research money. Now it's been literally thrown at everyone who's of repute is doing research. So everything, and I think number four, or maybe you're going to get to it, is the legal side of things and the administration by the government. Now, that's correct. Probably been speeded up.
Yeah. So, you know, the last factor was definitely that, you know, normally there's a lot of administrative hurdles that one has to get over. But you can imagine in a context where you have your entire economy shut down, people dying, you know, you're not going to have paperwork sit on somebody's desk for a month. That's just not going to happen, because the president is literally going to be asking you, why haven't you actually, you know, dealt with this paperwork to allow this vaccine to be tested on the next phase. So
the speed of which that is happening is unprecedented as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, this is actually something to be celebrated. It's not something to be feared. And in fact, you know, when I asked Dr. Linda Gail Becker, who was part of the J&J trials, this very question, she actually said to me, you know, the question we should be asking is, you know, not why was it so quick to develop a vaccine for this illness, but why has it taken us so long to develop vaccines for other illnesses? That's really the question. And it speaks
We've
to
proven
the fact,
how fast we can if we have the
if we have the will, if we have the funding,
the will is the big one.
The political will and the funding. It actually shows you how quickly you can address the health issue. So I think that's more the question to ask.
Yeah, because any research is always held back by funding and red tape.
Absolutely.
We need red tape. Let's not get around it. But the speed of which red tape can be overcome has been proven with this. That is the big one for me, for converting me to a 100% pro-vaccine, is the understanding of this four steps process of what's happened. I think the big one is that pre-existing research takes 3 or 4 years off that 8 years. And you've got a whole bunch of other things. And really, we've already been 1 year into the specific COVID-19, or maybe even longer, that 18 months COVID-19 research that we've discovered. So really, there is no excuse based on, well, it's taken so fast, well, there must be something wrong.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if people are worried about that, they should do their research and have a look and go into Johnson & Johnson, and you can find evidence there of all phases of the trial. So no phase has been cut out. Nothing of importance has been cut out. You know, the only kind of things that have been shortened are kind of red tape, bureaucracy, and the delays that often come when there isn't enough funding or there's not enough people working on the problem.
Just a little bit on the side, do you think that this is going to now cause positive problems, because now governments have realized, hey, you guys can do this faster. If we've got a problem, we have, you say, malaria, and there is some sort of promising research. A country that is devastated by malaria. I mean, malaria is a terrible disease to have. I mean, Africa, so many people die from it. Now, all of a sudden, if there's the willpower and the funding, we can start getting, emphasize good research, reputable research, accelerated in the same way if there's that willpower.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, what this pandemic has shown is that you cannot separate well-being from the well-being of an economy. You know, economies are made by people being well, you know, and as soon as you don't prioritize that, you're automatically going to have a negative impact on people's overall development, including the economy. And so I think in this instance, it's really, for me, been very, illustrative of the fact that you cannot separate health from well-being from a healthy economy. You know, the kinds of society we want to build are where we have healthy people who have healthy livelihoods. And I think if one starts to separate those, we have a problem.
The ubiquity of the pandemic has probably been a real boon for scientists who need to study something, because there's never been something that's you can actually measure very quickly how fast it spreads and the intensity it impacts people, because it's something that's happening to everybody at this moment. Where other areas where you've needed vaccines, it's been quite difficult to track and set up tracking. Now it's just like, so that's what I'm trying to say, is there are a number of positives coming out of the pandemic that will impact our future well-being.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, just the systems that have come into place to actually monitor people's state of well-being, to monitor hospitalizations, deaths, etc. You know, those systems are very helpful systems for us to pick up any kind of different pandemic, even outside of COVID, you know. So I think that's been amazing. The other thing that I've personally seen in the Western Cape, for example, is how, you know, it's really just mobilized all the different parts of government to come together, to work together. I mean, even this project we're doing on the community videos on the vaccinations, that's a collaboration between the Department of Transport and the Department of Health. And so for me, that's a really great example of how government has come together to focus on a common goal, you know. And so the kind of silo thinking that we've seen in previous eras, I think, is really going to go, you know.
I mean, as you explained at the beginning of the program, the collaboration between Department of Trade and Transport and Health, all of a sudden government departments have been presidential order, you will work together, because there's much in our lives that you need more than one government department. And before, like, the whole silo mentality that's been disproven is that we can work together. I mean, as citizens, we can work together. You see how people have... I was chatting to someone who started, or was party to starting a community kitchen, helping people. Now, that's developed into something now where people who are unemployed and the aged are getting meals once a day. Now, that's purely because... this huge event has impacted a community. Now, people have started doing things. Now, as there's been a subsidence of the pandemic, these initiatives continue. So, and I'm emphasizing the positive. I think we need to emphasize the positive more out of the pandemic, what we've learned.
Yeah, if I can just comment on that, I think to me that's one of the greatest victories of of the coronavirus pandemic, or positive aspects to come out, is the incredible community collaboration and community response to
less
COVID.
Hunger.
Well, I mean, we've had more hunger because of, you know, lack of employment.
But I'm saying more response to hunger than we had.
But more response to hunger, yeah. And communities really, you know, and we work in a number of communities where we've seen so many NGOs whose job is not even about, addressing hunger, actually put down whatever they're doing, start putting together soup kitchens and really helping. The Community Action Networks, absolutely brilliant, incredible initiative.
I interviewed them on the show and the different initiatives they have. I mean, absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And so I think that's really, it's really empowered communities, you know, and that's something that we are trying to do in the areas we work with, is to actually develop that relationship where government can support community initiatives, but that community initiatives actually are the ones that have the power, because to me, that's how it needs to be.
Sometimes we need a kick up the backside to get us actually doing things. And COVID-19 has been a really big one, and it's got initiatives going that would never, I mean, Musenberg had a bit of a community garden. Now, all of a sudden, there's a reason. We need to feed people. Come on, let's get together. And it's built a huge amount of community spirit. People who had never talked to each other standing cutting carrots in a kitchen. So it has a major impact. Okay, that was a little side. I just want to get back onto the vaccine. One of the questions people ask is, what is inside the vaccine? What are the ingredients? Is it halal? Is it kosher? There's a number of questions that people have actually raised.
Yes. So people, can access a list of the ingredients online of any vaccine. You can look it up. It's very easy to get that information. But basically,
that's another bit of fake news. People say all sorts of bad things are in vaccines, but you can actually go and see the content.
So you can go to the J&J website, you could go to the WHO. We'll be also putting up some graphics around the contents of the vaccine. So you can literally read what the actual ingredients are. That's really, it's not difficult to get that information. But obviously check your source, make sure it's a verifiable source, you know, because we know there's lots of fake news out there about all kinds of allegations of what's in vaccines. But basically,
we're going to change gears to that in a moment.
Great. Yeah, so essentially it contains a very small part of the virus, which is not enough to cause COVID, but enough to get your body to create an immune response. It contains a couple of salts. It contains some alcohol, just as, you know, so that it remains preserved. And the vaccine is halal. So it has been reviewed by the various Muslim research boards and Islamic councils. And across the world, it has been approved as halal. And it's been rolled out in Saudi Arabia, in Pakistan, so in many, in Malaysia, Indonesia, so in many Muslim countries. And so that isn't something that people need to worry about. It is also kosher. And it doesn't contain any animal products, so it also shouldn't be an issue for vegans.
With the whole newsworthiness of the event, I shouldn't call it an event, a pandemic. One of the things that has happened is we've already spoken about it is fake news, misinformation, all the rest of it. Can we just sort of move into that and look at some of these things, because fake news does its rounds. I mean, I'm not a Facebook junkie, but I use Facebook as for information, especially in the community I work, you know, public safety and other things. So health is a new one for me. But identifying fake news to those of us who understand it and are very much involved is relatively easy. But for the average person who reposts something as gospel, it is really dangerous. What is fake news in this realm?
Yeah, so myself and my team have done a lot of research on fake news, in particular in relation to the COVID vaccine. And so maybe I'll just start off with definitions and then just give some examples. So how are we defining fake news? For us, fake news is when people are intentionally creating false information in order to manipulate people. So that's our definition of fake news. And an example of that would be there was this video going around of Bill Gates where, you know, the video showed him speaking to the CIA, briefing them that the vaccine was being created to control people's behavior by affecting their brains.
And popping in microchips.
Through a microchip. And so in that video, the video that was circulated was very, very blurry. And now if you actually then
blurred looked, on purpose.
Yes. So it was blurred on purpose. And then if you looked up that video, so it was something that I did. I actually Googled that video, queried like, is this authentic? Isn't it? And what we then managed to find was that actually if you find that video, the original video where it's not blurred, where you actually see it without the blur that's been put on it.
I'm looking at it at the moment.
Yeah. And you can see, I mean, does that look like Bill Gates?
Completely, completely different to Bill Gates.
Yeah, and the blurry version?
You couldn't really see. I mean, on the blurry version, you could easily...
I mean, it could be anyone, right?
Yeah, you can't even see the guy's got glasses on in the blurry version. And in the clear version, it's very, very clear.
Yeah, so this is what they do, you know. So they take a video of somebody else. And, of course, just the fact that somebody else was saying that is obviously conceding in its own right. But the point is that, you know, that's not Bill Gates briefing the CIA. And it's intentional. Whoever has done that has intentionally put a blur on that video, you know. We've seen other videos where there were two people debating, you know, talking about the vaccine, saying, no, we're going to use this vaccine to kill black people because there's just too many black people. And again, with that video, when we researched it, we discovered actually the one guy, you know, he's not a scientist, you know, he's somebody who's a musician and an artist. The other guy who's supposedly the doctor giving the evidence was somebody who was found to, you know, was convicted of malpractice.
Yeah, he was a naturopath. He wasn't a medical doctor.
Exactly, you know, so we have, you know, and these are just two of many examples, you know, there were lots and lots of examples of that we saw. So that's very clearly fake news where it's been done intentionally to provide people with false information in order to manipulate them.
But they do have agendas. I mean, they might be anti-vax people, so thinking,
of course,
with their confirmation bias, what can we find or create that's going to sow and, of course, support our... Yeah. Own point of view.
No, absolutely. So, you know, they have many kinds of agendas. One of it is to stop people from being vaccinated because they might not believe in it. Others of them actually are just plainly racist and don't want black people to get the vaccine, you know. Others, it's just about money. They know if you create something that's sensational and people click on, it takes you to a website which now has advertising, and so they make a lot of money. A lot of it's actually about money. And you know, the world is not something new to us. You know, these kinds of techniques have been used you know, to get political people into power. I mean, I think we're all very much aware of how fake news literally manipulates people to take a particular action. You know, that's in somebody else's interest, usually not in the interests of humanity.
How have you found the best way to spot fake news?
Yeah. So there's a couple of key things. The first one that I like to think of first is, how does it make you feel? So if you see a headline or a video and it makes you feel outraged, really upset, angry, probably it's fake news, because why is it pressing so many buttons?
Or at least something that needs to be investigated.
Correct, correct. You know, so obviously there's upsetting things that happen in the world, but, you know, they're not put in such a way as to be like a sensationalist headline, you know. So as soon as you see that, already you should have the red flags going up that this might be fake news, because it manipulates you through emotion. So number one, is it creating a big emotional response? Number two, does it have lots of bad spelling and a lot of exclamation marks? You know, and again, this speaks to the kind of alarmist, shocking sensation, because as soon as you're shocked, you're going to share it, you're going to click on it, and that's what they want. So that's another way to tell. And then normally there's no actual logo. So you can't tell, you know, what institution is this coming from. And you also oftentimes don't even know who's the person. Who's the person who's actually sharing this, number one, who's put it out there, and who's the person in the video? There's a lot of videos we don't even know who the person is. So checking for, you know, those kinds of markers, very important. And then also want to check, is this story being reported by any other newsworthy source? You know, because if it's a real story that's that shocking, it's not just going to be on a WhatsApp video. It's going to be reported in all your major newspapers, your major TV channels. So check, is it there? If it's not there, probably it's just fake news.
So what is the difference between fake news and misinformation?
Yeah. So misinformation is really more where somebody often has believed fake news and they are now spreading information that's just not true. So their intention isn't to confuse people and manipulate people. They just actually misinformed themselves.
So the person who reposts fake news is not trying to do what fake news is doing. They've just been misinformed. Yes. and they've reposted it.
Yeah, normally the person who's sharing fake news actually has very good intentions. They're trying to protect people. They feel like this is the truth. They must get it out there. And so actually they have very good intentions. Unfortunately, the people who've made the fake news have completely manipulated them. But, you know, their intentions are good. And so I think one example of misinformation, you know, that we've seen quite a lot of in the videos is, you know, of certain African presidents, like the president of Tanzania, who had said, no, there's no COVID in Tanzania. And so now that is you know, for us, it's, you know, if you look at then what happened in Tanzania, in fact, he actually died, I think, yesterday of COVID.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Because I was hoping that it wasn't COVID, because he made that such...
Yeah, we don't know for sure if it was COVID, but, you know, the allegations are that he was flown to Kenya and he had a, you know, unexplained heart condition, which is often how COVID can present. Certainly we know the vice president of Zanzibar was being treated for COVID. And we know that there have been all these unexplained deaths from respiratory infections in Tanzania. And so for us as scientists, it's pretty clear what's going on. But I don't think his intention was to mislead people. I think he genuinely believed that this was the situation.
He had misinformation from his medical people saying, no, we don't have it. So that's what he's not a medical doctor, so he can't go and give that side of things. Yeah. Misinformation, the third is verifiable information. It's so important when we're looking at the fake news and this misinformation to be able to verify. How do we verify the information? You mentioned logos and things like that.
Yeah. So can you identify the person's name who's actually giving you that information? And is that person qualified to give you information about vaccines? You know, so if it's somebody who's an expert in public health or infectious diseases, great. You know, if it's not, then probably, you know, you want to check up what they're saying is actually true or not. Number two, what institution is that person actually aligned to? You know, and is that institution a credible institution? You know, because people also make up institutions. So you need to check, is this institution
as they do with
believable?
Degrees.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and also look for logos, you know, because any verifiable information is going to come from a source that has a logo. So if there's no mark there, probably it's somebody who's just made it up, you know. And so really that's how one would look for something that's verifiable. And it also normally has a date is the other important thing.
Yeah, I think if you do, I mean, with I've learned with social media, do a bit of research, look at, I mean, the first thing I do is I type in the subject and I type hoax after it. And then you go to Snopes or one of these places and they've already spent ages investigating, saying, no, this came out in 2007. Here's the picture and all the rest of it. It doesn't, it's not rocket science to do a bit of personal research. You know, I think everyone on social media these days has become researchers, and a doctor who's been studying for 30 years is no longer know what he says or what she says valid because you found some other site that you can't verify. And I think that's where the danger comes in. We've got about 5 minutes or so left in the program. What is the main point you want to communicate if Mary and John are sitting at home listening to this broadcast now? What is the main thing about vaccinations you'd like to communicate to them?
I think for me, the most basic point would be that vaccinations are safe, that they're effective, that even if you have some kind of comorbidity like HIV, hypertension or diabetes, it's still safe for you to take it. And that really vaccinating yourself is not just an act of self-protection. It's also about protecting those who are vulnerable around you, because you can prevent it then being spread to those people. And ultimately, it's actually about helping South Africa, because if enough people get vaccinated, we can prevent further massive waves, we can prevent further lockdowns, we can get our economy going, we can get tourists to come back to the country.
We can get rid of masks.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
You know, we will still have to wear them once we've been vaccinated, until enough people have been vaccinated, you know. And so if we really want to try and rebuild our country after this devastation, you know, the way I see it, it's really something that we should do, you know. And for those who are feeling comfortable to take vaccines, take the vaccine so that you can show those who need that proof that it's actually okay to take, you know, because you will have people who need a little bit longer to feel comfortable. Mm. And, you know, we're not trying to force anybody to take vaccines.
You don't have to take the vaccine.
No,
it's not part of a conspiracy you've got to take. If you don't want to, you don't. I mean, rather take it, but if you don't want to, no one's going to force you to do it.
No, and I think, you know, people ultimately will make the right choice, because they'll see that actually everybody's taken it. People are fine. Nobody's had these terrible side effects. And so they'll reach a point where people will be comfortable, you know. So I think there's no need to actually really try and rush people. And certainly it's not going to be forced on anybody.
Right. The first phase was the medical staff. That was the first phase. And then those of us who are involved in law enforcement agencies and essential services, that's hopefully coming up mid-May. Is that correct?
Yeah, probably. I would guess probably more end of May.
End of May.
Yeah.
And then people with comorbidities and elderly, will that come after that, after essential services?
So the people with comorbidities and the elderly is also part of phase two. So phase one is the healthcare workers and community healthcare workers. Phase two is essential workers.
And comorbidities and aged.
And comorbidities and the elderly. And then phase three is everybody else.
And that is adults. That'll 18 years
people,
and older.
Yes.
Why no under 18s?
So the vaccine hasn't been tested on children, so we don't know 100% that it is safe. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be safe in children, but, you know, one has to follow research protocols. And so until we've tested it in enough children to prove that, it wouldn't be ethical for us to now go and inject children with the vaccine.
So it's very important that we create this herd immunity with vaccines?
Correct.
And by doing that, the children are going to be impacted by that as well.
Oh, absolutely, because as soon as we have herd immunity, then the disease can't spread. That's the definition, is that enough people are vaccinated so that the disease actually doesn't have enough people in order to spread between people. And so that will immediately give protection to children. And just the other thing to mention is that the vaccine also is not yet recommended for pregnant women. And so pregnant women
should
also
not
take that.
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's a huge amount of information to digest. I hope I've been able to get you to communicate all the important information. But from what I have looked at and what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be getting the vaccine as soon as it's available. Fortunately, it'll be sooner with being involved in a law enforcement agency. But we need to make sure that we understand it, and getting that understanding, we can do it. Any information, is there a website where this is available?
Yeah, so the Western Cape Department of Health has a website where people can get that information. I'll provide you the URL and you can give it to your listeners.
Okay, that's great. We'll pop that there. So if we listen to what the experts are saying, give it some personal thought. It's not a major deal then.
No, and I would really encourage community leaders to go out there, get the information you need. I'm very happy to share our information with you, and please speak to people that, you know, who are your community, because we need everybody to get on board. This is not something government can do alone. We need everyone's help.
Right. Well, Joanne, Dr. Joanne Corrigal, thank you so much for taking the time and effort, especially when you've had a really difficult week. We appreciate your input and trust that this is the information our listeners need. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks to the listeners.
Well, that brings us to the end of this show. Next week, I'll be back again, same time, 6 o'clock on a Monday evening. Till then, goodbye. God bless.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.